The X Zone radio and TV show is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X Zone radio and TV show or in any manner endorsed by Rob McConnell, Relmar McConnell Media Company, Talkstar Radio Network, its affiliated stations, or employees.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
Sunshine, even when I'm standing in the rain.
Something welcome back, everyone. My name is Rob McConnell, and this is the X Zone on the Talkstar Radio Network, and we're heard around the world on the Talkstar Radio streaming audio, as well as our affiliate broadcast network throughout Canada, the United States, Central America, South America, the Caribbean, the Pacific Rim, Europe, and Asia. And as I said, the rest of the world, what little there is now, is able to listen to us on TalkStarRadio.com streaming audio. My producer tonight is the one and only Spandex Kid from Gotham City, Batman. Batman, nice working with you again. And I guess, Batman, this is the first time you and I've worked since the beginning of the new year. So, buddy, Happy New Year to you, Batman, and to the other people in Gotham City. Our guest this hour is Eugene Stovall, Dr. Eugene Stovall, and we're going to be talking about the conspiracy theory that explains blunder in America. Let me see, old hands are not surprised at the United States muscling in on great Central Asian oil grab with such gusto. And tell me, Eugene, how has conspiracy theories, how do they explain the blunders in America? And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob. I'm really delighted to be here and with your guests. Such a wide listenership is very delightful for me to be here.
Oh, we're glad you're here, sir.
Thank you. Conspiracy theories are as old as time. Many of the conspiracy theories are explanations for political events when official explanations seem unsatisfactory. For example, the many efforts to discredit the Warren Commission's report on the Kennedy assassinations are considered conspiracy theories.
Yes.
But there's another way of looking at conspiracy theories as well, as you know.
It
can be looked at as a method of inquiry. For example, like conflict theory or social contract theory or even disjointed incremental theories are really very well accepted among academic institutions and research institutions. Unfortunately, conspiracy theories aren't.
Now, what constitutes a conspiracy theory versus an inquiry?
Well, that's a good question. Let's look at the inquiry.
All right.
If I were going to inquire into, say, the first Gulf War, the consensus theory would say, well, what happened was that Iraq attacked Kuwait, and the free world led by the United States responded and reestablished the rule of law. And this is pretty much what happened. And there's no sense of a government cover-up here.
Right.
But on the other hand, a conspiracy theorist might say, well, look, there were at least two green light meetings between the United States and the ambassador. Two green light meetings between the ambassador to Iraq from the United States and the Iraqi head of state. In each of these meetings, the Iraqi head of state told the ambassador that there were issues between Iraq and Kuwait that needed to be resolved one way or another. As a matter of fact, there was a deal on the table that said that Kuwait was going to pay back $9 billion in indemnification to Iraq. But the ambassador from the United States told the Iraqi president that her boss, the Secretary of State, and his boss, the president, did not believe that there were any issues that affected the United States in this dispute between Iraq and Kuwait. And so these two meetings are known as green light meetings. And then after these green light meetings took place, Kuwait reneged on the deal. Instead of paying $9 billion in indemnification, they said they'd only pay $6 billion. The Iraqi president got upset. Thinking they had the green light from the United States, then Iraq attacked.
Dr. Stovall, please stand by. We have to take a two-minute commercial break. Dr. Eugene Stovall is my special guest. And the good doctor and I will be back on the other side of this two-minute commercial break as the X-Zone continues. We're right here, live and around the world, on the Talkstar Radio Network from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Don't go away. We'll be back.
Hold your home, boy. Can't touch this.
Eugene Stovall is our special guest. His website is www.eugenestovall.com. Dr. Stovall, in your opinion, sir, what has been the greatest conspiracy in the history of the United States?
That's a pretty broad question. For me, in my most recent book, Blood and Brotherhood, I talk about the Tulsa situation. And generally, the massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the 1920s, where 10,000 whites invaded the area that was occupied and where black people owned their homes, mm-hmm. and was completely decimated. Sinclair Oil Company came in with their planes and actually dropped dynamite and other explosives on the homes and the buildings that were owned by blacks, and about 1,000 blacks were killed, and the land that their homes and businesses stood on, the Tulsa government actually condemned and allowed the oil companies to come in and purchase the land that had been condemned for little or nothing back taxes. And now you have, you know, that whole area above the north of the railroad tracks, which is, you know, big development by Tulsa, was formerly owned by blacks. That, I think, for me, is one of the biggest conspiracies, because it was not just the fact that this land was taken and these black people were murdered, but it was timed in such a way as to cover up the fact that the President of the United States was signing over the oil leases that were owned by the United States Navy Department over to a cartel that was actually headquartered in Canada and was led by such oil companies as I mentioned, Sinclair Sinclair Oil Company, as well as Standard Oil of California. So to me, the fact that all these black people died and lost all their land, their possessions, and all to cover up this oil conspiracy, to me, was one of the greatest conspiracies.
Not only was it a conspiracy, but it was a travesty against humanity.
Exactly.
Dr. Stovall, why do certain events get classified as conspiracies? For example, the most recent one that I can think of is the September 11th, 2001 attack on America. You have those who believe that there is a greater conspiracy that the United States government was actually behind this attack, and that is that the conspiracy behind this attack was to usher in the New World Order. And what is your opinion on that, as far as a conspiracy is concerned?
As far as the conspiracy is concerned, well, I served in the United States Air Force. I served in SAC. I was an airman, airborne radio repairman. And I was on a mobility so that I was authorized to go off to some remote spot, and if in case the country was attacked, our bombers wouldn't be able to land back here, we could go somewhere else, and there would be a whole team there that would be able to fit the bomber. And I was the radio person on that team. So as a result, I was also, at the SAC base that I was at, there was a wing of fighters under not SAC, but Air Defense Command. And the Air Defense Command had these F-104s and F-106s sitting on a pod. Their flight crews were, you know, within running distance of their aircraft, and they were ready to go. If an alert happened, they would be off in less than 5 minutes between the time the alert was sounded and the time they took off. Now, getting to your question, Rob, my belief is, and I haven't really, I have no, I'm a writer. I write novels, and I don't have any official information other than what everybody else has. But if 9/11 happened the way it said it happened, then the most important man in the United States, in the history of the United States, has to be Payne Stewart. And I say that because, do you know who Payne Stewart is?
No, sir.
Payne Stewart was a golfer, a pro golfer who was flew his own private jet. And after he won the Ryder Cup, he was flying home and with his flight plan filed with the FAA, and he had a heart attack. So he put his jet on autopilot, but his jet flew off course. 5 minutes after his jet flew off course, the Air Defense Command was in the air with three jets trying to find out what happened to Payne Stewart. Hello?
Yes, we're still here.
Okay. Now, if a private jet flying off course attracts Air Defense Command, and the only time the United States airspace was attacked, and the Air Defense Command not only was not scrambled, they were missing in action. And the only reason for the Air Defense Command to exist is for it to prevent just these kinds of attacks, then why wasn't the general called on the carpet? Why weren't heads rolling all over the place? Because since the U.S. Air Force was established in 1946, and no attack has ever occurred other than this one, and this was the only time Air Defense Command could have saved the United States, and it didn't. So my question back to you is, if the official explanation is as it happened, why was Air Defense Command, and oh, by the way, the air traffic controllers, asleep at the wheel?
Several questions that have yet to be answered, and you had a number of them right on the head. In fact, there were only two aircraft available to protect the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. Ironically, the Air Defense and the United States Air Force were on a training mission that simulated an attack on major centers with jets flying into large buildings. So there was a lot of miscommunication and mischatter. Another conspiracy that I talk about is the Kennedy assassination. A lot of people say there's a hidden conspiracy behind this as well. Do people create conspiracies, or do circumstances create conspiracies?
Well, you mentioned something very interesting, Rob, in the Kennedy assassination. And I just want, before I answer that question, I want to mention the fact that very few people realize that there was a trial around the Kennedy assassination. And the trial had to do with one of the so-called plotters. I think he was a government employee. And it's been so long, I probably should have done some research. But in the trial, this particular person was one of the well-known people that were involved, claimed that he was being unjustly vilified as one of the government people involved in this assassination. So he actually sued the newspapers that were saying that he had some involvement, and he lost the suit. And there was enough information there to suggest that the Warren Commission report, which is what most of the conspiracy theorists try to deal with, was absolutely incorrect when it promoted its one single assailant explanation. That, in fact, there was enough information from this trial, not just the physical evidence, but from the trial itself to implicate very high-ranking members of the United States government.
What other conspiracy theories are there today that might explain current events?
Well, you know, there's the Great Game. The Great Game was in the 19th century. And it was basically Imperial Britain and Imperial Russia. Imperial Britain would do anything it could to protect its interest in India. The East Indian Company, which is just brought untold riches and wealth from India, is the board of directors of the royal family. Now, Russia, on the other hand, in the 19th century, had a need for an ice-free port, and it basically saw the Central Asian area as its zone of influence. And it was very concerned by the fact that England, in order to protect its Indian colony, was trying to establish allies in Central Asia. So places like Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and the other more familiar stands, which are Afghanistan and Pakistan, were like chess pieces on this great big huge chessboard. Now, the rules of the game were very simple. Great Britain and Russia played the same rules. They were trying to get allies. You get one of these rulers or chiefs or kings on your side, and you were loyal to them. And this is the way the Great Game was played.
Stand by, Eugene. You and I have to take a commercial break. Dr. Eugene Stovall is our special guest. www.eugenestovall.com, and the good doctor and I return on the other side of this commercial break talking about conspiracies. And if you have a question that you'd like to ask Dr. Stovall, give me a call, 1-877-528-8255. My name's Rob McConnell. This is the X-Zone, live and around the world from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, exclusively on Talkstar.
Hold your home, boy. Can't touch this. Yes.
Greetings, X-Zone Nation. This is Les Pedroghi from AskAPI.org, and you're listening to my old friend, Rob McConnell, on the X-Zone Radio Show, heard exclusively around the world on the Talkstar Radio Network.
All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. Without saying a word, you can light up the dark. Try as I may, I can never explain what I hear when you don't say a thing. The smile on your face lets me know that you need me. There's a truth in your eyes saying you.
Dr. Eugene Stovall is our special guest, www.eugenestovall.com. He is the author of Frank Yerby, Victim's Guilt, and Blood and Brotherhood, a novel of love in a time of hate. And Dr. Stovall, before we went to the commercial break, we just started talking about how Great Britain and Russia conspired against each other, and the control was India in a conspiracy.
Right. Well, this was known as the Great Game. Now, the Great Game was sort of ended by the First and Second World Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States, however, was introduced to the Great Game at the outset of the Second World War because Great Britain put the Shah of Iran, who the United States put on the throne, under house arrest and held him all through the war because of the issue of oil. The Iranians then viewed the United States as a better protector in this great conflict that was known as the Great Game than either England or Russia. So they naturally sort of moved toward the United States. They liked their institutions. They liked the idea of democracy. And they even, in 1951, instituted a parliament. And the parliament's first act, the person that was elected prime minister, the first act was to nationalize the oil. Well, the United States was not really happy with that.
I don't think they would be.
And so in 1953, there was a coup. They overthrew the parliament, killed a whole bunch of people, including the prime minister, and told the Shah of Iran he was to have dictatorial powers. He could stay in or they'd get another Shah. The Shah decided he would be the person that would run Iran and allow the United States to continue to have control over Iranian oil. And this situation remained for 20 years into the 1970s, and then two events occurred. One, OPEC was formed, and the Western world was held hostage to these greedy sheiks who wanted to set their own price for oil. And the second thing that happened was that the Iranian government was overthrown by an Islamic fundamentalist. Well, the United States didn't sit still for that, so what they did was to go to Iraq and raise an army, outfit a dictator, give them all the weapons they could have, and directed them against Iran. And there was this bloody, horrible war that was battled to a stalemate, and it lasted, you know, some 3 years. In the meantime, Russia says, waha, the United States has put a puppet in Iraq, and they're reestablishing a puppet in Iran, so the Great Game is on again. We'll put a puppet state in Afghanistan. Well, the United States said that wouldn't happen, and so they raised another group called the Taliban, and they outfitted them, gave them all these weapons, et cetera, and attacked the Russian puppet government, overthrew the Russian puppet government, and some even say that Russia was so upset and demoralized over this defeat that it led to the final crumbling of the Russian Empire. So, what we have here is the new gray game. But unfortunately, the new gray game has one real big difference from the old gray game. The new gray game, the client state is not like the paternalistic Imperial Russia or Imperial England. They kill their young. So all of the allies that the United States established in the great game, Saddam Hussein in Iraq, the Taliban, even to a certain extent the this fellow, what's his name, Bin Laden, all of these folk, and not to mention others, have been knocked off, bumped off, either complicit with the United States or with them not caring. Even Benazir Bhutto, who goes to Pakistan to try to aid in this new great game situation, is clearly sent to her death. So there is this real significant difference between the old great game, which went on for almost a half a century, and the new great game, which is going to be very short because there's no loyalty here. No one can trust anyone. And this is the land of Genghis Khan and the Golden Horde and Miwan and Kandahar and all of these great huge battles that took place throughout history, which our planners here in the United States don't seem to be aware of. All one has to do is read Herodotus and understand what they're up against. But
so it seems that we had Russia and the United States playing these countries and these people and these dictators as puppets.
Exactly. There's nothing new there.
No.
What is new is that there is this shall we say, Machiavellian cant that the United States brings to the table. For example, I mean, the United States and its Congress and its presidents declares that the Panama Canal should return to the Panama government.
Right.
And this is a political issue. This is a treaty is signed and all that. Oh, a new administration comes in and says, well, we're not going to have that happen. And because of the former dictator that we supported is in power, and we're going to turn on him, make him the bad guy, make him look like he's a whatever, and destroy that country and then renege on the treaty. So the United States has used this as a policy in Central America very often. A lot of the dictators that they supported and trained, they helped overthrow. Even in Vietnam, you know, the war didn't really get going good until the CIA had Diem assassinated.
Yeah.
So this geopolitical stance that the United States has taken, I think, is going to not serve them real well in Central Asia. It won't serve them as well in Central Asia as it serves in South America. I think that there are people that would probably be most likely to be friendly and sympathetic to the United States' interests, but because whoever turns out to be their friends wise up in the morgue, I don't think, you know, you're going to have a lot of people volunteering.
No, that's not a very nice place to end up. 1-877-528-8255 is toll free. Dr. Eugene Stovall is our special guest. He's the author of Frank Yerby, A Victim's Guilt, and Blood and Brotherhood, A Novel of Love in a Time of Hate. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Frank Yerby, A Victim's Guilt. Who is Frank Yerby?
Frank Yerby was a black man. He wrote 33 novels. Four of the novels were made into Hollywood movies. Of those 33 novels, he sold close to over 60 million books worldwide.
Wow.
In 30 some odd countries and 20 different languages. But black folks don't know who Frank Yerby is. He is not talked about in black bookstores. His books aren't sold there. They don't talk about him in black studies department.
Why not?
That's an excellent question. No one knows why. when I was asked to write his biography, I couldn't get the family to cooperate. I receive a lot of calls and emails from people in Europe, as a matter of fact, who remember Frank Yerby.
Mm-hmm.
One of the one person from Spain sent me a interview that Yerby did with a Spanish newspaper, which I had translated. And it's interesting that Yerby says that he was working for the WPA, which was the Roosevelt New Deal program. A lot of black writers and other writers were funded by the government to write in this writer's work. Langston Hughes and some others were involved. But Yerby, in this article, which was probably the last one he did before he died, was written in about 1985, said that when he was with the Federal Writers' Workshop, his primary responsibility was to provide information and intelligence, in similar like being a spy, on the black Muslims.
Now that's interesting. Now who placed him there? Who put him in? Was it the CIA? Was it?
Well, there's nothing. Well, the CIA, of course, didn't exist at that time.
Right.
But there were. You know, it does seem that the people within the federal government at the time, Roosevelt and Deal, would put him there. The interesting thing about Yerby, however, is all his books are written in a way, he calls them costume novels. And in a way, they mask the information that he's giving. So one book he wrote was The Serpent and the Staff. He predicts the fact that the dikes are going to fail in New Orleans. And he wrote this book in the 1950s, and it was, of course, a prediction that came true with Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
His last book, McKinsey's Hundred, written in 1985, actually tells you as much as you want to know about the Skull and Bones. And no one at that time that I know of, I didn't know anybody that was talking about the Skull and Bones. And it's Machiavellian intrigues.
Skull and Bones, one of the most secret organizations.
Exactly. One that I believe that the president belongs to.
That's right.
As well as his father.
Your second book is entitled Blood and Brotherhood, a novel of love in a time of hate. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Well, the book actually was generated because of my interest in all of the race riots that were taking place at the end of the First World War. There was what was called Red Summer of 1919, where all over the country, black communities black people were being murdered, hung, and their land, they were driven off the land. In Georgia, it was the estimate was that some 1,200 acres of land a month were lost to black people just simply by the Klan coming in and driving them off the land. Either you leave or you get lynched. But my main concern about these lynchings that were occurring after the First World War was driven by the clear interest that the United States Army had in trying to get them back on the farm. The problem being, in their mind, black men, 200,000 black men in uniform had been sent to Europe to kill whites. What are you going to do with them when they come back to the United States? They were very, very concerned that these soldiers who had learned to do battle would do battle in the United States. And they were so concerned that there were all of these Machiavellian kinds of plots and things that were done against black people. And so my book actually follows the exploits or the activities of this World War I veteran who comes out of the army and his only job that he can get is a messenger with some high, and the other messengers were high school kids. And then he gets a position with the Marcus Garvey's UNIA, and a friend of his is a government agent and comes and wants him to turn information. And the whole story is about how the government spied on the UNIA and other organizations, and how the Ku Klux Klan was behind that. And ultimately, my characters have to run, flee New York. And then I have this love interest with this Jamaican woman, and they both have to flee New York, and they go to Los Angeles, which is the home of my family. And in Los Angeles, very few people know that there were some courageous black people there that fought the Klan. The Klan threatened the Los Angeles black community with a Tulsa solution. They said that they were going to actually come into Los Angeles and do to the lot of the Central Avenue neighborhood the same thing that they did in Tulsa.
Doctor, stand by. You and I have to take our final break for this hour. Dr. Eugene Stovall is our special guest. Once again, explanation, the name of his two books, Frank Yerby, A Victim's Guilt, and Blood and Brotherhood, A Novel of Love in a Time of Hate. His website, www.eugenestovall.com. We'll be back on the other side of this commercial break as we continue live and around the world from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, right here on the Talkstar Radio Network.
Hold on.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this task and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind, hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable.
And welcome back to the X-Zone, everyone. In the next hour, we have Elizabeth Joyce joining us. She's going to be doing psychic readings for the X-Zone Nation. And then in hour number four, we have astrologer Chris Fleischer, who will be on doing astrological readings for you tonight. And if you'd like to talk to either one of our last two guests tonight, who are going to, you know, Elizabeth Joyce, she joins us on a regular basis here doing psychic readings, and Chris Fleischer, internationally known astrologer. If you'd like to get either a psychic reading or an astrological reading, all you do is you pick up that phone and dial 1-877-528-8255. That's toll-free at 1-877-528-8255. Dr. Eugene Stovall is our special guest this hour. www.eugenestovall.com. And first of all, Doctor, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And
it's been a delight for me.
It's been an enriching hour with so much history, and I want to thank you very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
We talk a lot on this program about conspiracies, conspiracy theories, and I guess one of the ones that we focus on is the UFO conspiracy, where the government has knowledge of UFOs, that they've done the reverse engineering of the UFOs, and that the aliens are here. The government knows about it, but they're not letting the public know. Personally, I don't believe it, because if Bill Clinton cannot have an affair with Monica Lewinsky in the most secure building in the United States without the world finding out, mm-hmm, how in the name of heaven are you going to hide a UFO and three aliens? Mm-hmm. You know, it makes no sense. But what I have found, and I don't know if this is, you know, if this is the same throughout the conspiracy world, that those who talk about the conspiracies and keep the conspiracy alive are those who are making most money by keeping the conspiracy alive.
Hmm. That's interesting. I have a completely different view of the UFO space thing. As a matter of fact, my son and I have a lot of arguments. My son is just graduating from getting his master's at Johns Hopkins, and I'm quite proud of him, but we kind of go at each other. The take I have on conspiracy as far as the space is...
We've got about 30 seconds.
There is no space. That, in fact, there never was space. There's no such thing as space travel. That if you look at the... If you think of the moon being some trillion tons of weight, and it circles the Earth, and it doesn't deviate, and the scientific precision instruments can tell you where the moon's going to be within a gnat's eyelash, then there must be something keeping it there. And if there's something keeping all that weight in an orbit, then there's obviously nothing that can go from this Earth to that moon that can penetrate something that can keep trillions of tons.
I hate to do this because I love the way this is going. I'd love to have you back on so we can continue this in the future.
Sure.
Doctor, thanks very much for joining us. Take care of yourself, and keep those conspiracies coming. I'll be back on the other side.